Hello and welcome to Nolan Me, Nolan You, a limited series podcast that celebrates the work of writer and director Christopher Nolan. I'm your host, Emily Murray, and today I'm joined by self-confessed trailer addict and film marketing specialist Anton Volkov, the man behind Trailer Track, for a very special bonus episode. Discussing the unique way Nolan's films are marketed, we take a look at the trailers, chat about the IMAX prologues, analyse the future of film marketing, looking at you, Tenet and Fortnite, and much more. Welcome, Anton, to Nolan Me, Nolan You. How are you today?
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, all good. It's been, you know, crazy, and just the last 4 months of lockdown has just moved so quickly. It just gone by like that. So, I mean, hasn't been too bad, like, personally, but, you know, it's just a crazy, crazy time for everything.
Yeah, very crazy. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I run a film trailer website called Trailer Track, which I founded just over 4 years ago now in 2016, which is the idea behind it. It's basically the internet's main news source when it comes to when new trailers are coming out. And so this is just me pulling information from various sources, and I get some tips, and here's some info as well about, you know, when we get the new trailer for this film or that film, whenever, you know, the thing with Nolan and Tenet, those trailers are such events that people are looking forward to. So whenever there's news like, oh, the next Tenet trailer's dropping, you know, next week on Fortnite, you know, that's the sort of stuff that I'd be, this is the thing I'd be all over. And so, yeah, this is really kind of what it's been about. I also, kind of in real life, I'm a master's student at the National Film and Television School in just outside of London in Beaconsfield at the, they've got this amazing marketing and distribution course that's been running for three years now, which is really unique in terms of getting some fantastic access to the industry. It's run by the former head of marketing and distribution for Curzon Artificial Eye. So if anyone's interested in actually, you know, learning and how to, you know, do this and get into the industry, like, there's no better place than this in the UK.
No, that sounds like such an amazing course, to be honest. And you seem to have really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, and it's been amazing 1.5 years. So I graduated the very end of the year. For us, the academic year runs from January to December. So it's not like, you know, September to the summer, like the rest of us. I'm officially on summer break now, but I'm working on a big graduation project. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to say what it is, but it's like you have to develop an actual fictional campaign going all the way from festivals to all the way to, you know, how you're going to release it in the UK and how you're going to release it on home entertainment and what happens after that with television and streaming and so on and so forth. You have to work all of that out for a real film that's currently still in, well, so it's done. It was meant to premiere at a festival that was cancelled, but it's a real film that's not out. And that's the exciting thing about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk all about everything marketing in terms of Christopher Nolan, but I just want to know, what was your introduction to Christopher Nolan? Do you remember what the first movie of his you watched was?
First film, I think it was Batman Begins, actually. It was Batman Begins. We at the time, I was some people know this, I'm originally from Russia, my family's Russian, and I moved to the UK when I was like 8-9 years old, and so I was really young when I first saw Batman Begins. It was out on DVD at the time. I never saw it at the cinemas, but I wasn't aware, obviously, at the time. I knew a bit that it was kind of a darker take after, you know, Batman and Robin and so on, but I had no kind of idea about Nolan and, you know, who he is as a director, really, until Inception in 2010, which I saw on the big screen. And then it came at a time for me, you know, 2010, 2011, that I started really actually paying attention to trailers and marketing as a fan. It was around the time that, you know, I started going on social media and on Twitter in particular. And it was that kind of weird confluence of things. It was, you know, Inception. Then the following year came, obviously, the Dark Knight Rises campaign. And there was a time where there was just, you know, people were losing it online over, like, oh my god, the first teaser for Dark Knight Rises was in front of, you know, the last Harry Potter movie, you know, Deathly Hallows Part 2. And then there was that. Then for me, kind of, there were several things that kind of fed into it. So in terms of Nolan, it was that, and then at the end of the year, I found out about the IMAX prologue for Dark Knight Rises, and I discovered like IMAX 70mm, which is Nolan's favorite format, as we all know, for the first time, as kind of a thing that you could go to the cinema for and kind of have that ultimate experience. Obviously, I was here in the UK at the time and I knew of the BFI IMAX, but I wasn't as intricately aware of the technology about it. So it was so in terms of Nolan, it was that, and there were several other things that fed into it. Like, you know, there was that teaser for the very first Avengers movie at the end credits of Captain America 1. Then, so there was the whole Avengers thing. There was also 2010, 2011 time, David Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo that had an incredible viral marketing campaign. The amazing thing that they did was they did this scavenger hunt, essentially. If you've seen the film or read the books, you know that part of the story are those kind of framed dried flowers that are there as clues. And basically, they hid like the original props from the film, signed by Fincher, in places all around the world, including the UK, including London. And there was this website called whatishiddeninsnow.com or something along those lines, where and there was a production blog that supposedly Fincher ran or Fincher had an involvement in, where it just, you know, really cryptic behind the scenes images or kind of in world stuff, like from the world of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And from there, what you had to do is, when there was an image posted on that blog, it's called Mouth Taped Shut, you can look it up. You then had to decode a special code word that you would then put into that other website, and you'd get a set of coordinates that you would go to, tell them the code word, and you get the framed one of the framed flowers. And it's not just that they gave away, they also like put like custom VHS together, put custom VHS tapes, you know, about the Harriet Banger mystery. It's just point being, I'm kind of sidetracking here, but you know, 2011, so 2010, 2011, so yeah, Inception, Dark Knight Rises, that was really kind of my exposure, because at the same time, both to Nolan as a director, but also, you know,
Marketing,
marketing and trailers as a fan, that's kind of where it all started for
and I
me.
suppose that's where like social media really started becoming huge as well. 2011, 2012, I suppose, like Facebook was like huge at that time, and I can't remember how big Twitter and Instagram was, but it seems to, you know, all tie together really, doesn't it?
Indeed, like it's funny, like at the time when I first heard about Twitter, it was like something like 2009, kind of the big selling point was, oh, you can talk to celebrities. That's literally how kind of the elevator pitch for it at the time. I was kind of, oh, okay, I might sign up. But then, you know, the rest is history,
The
I would
rest is
say.
history. So yeah, we're just going to talk a bit about, I suppose, the way that Nolan films are marketed, because like you're the expert on this, but in my mind they are marketed in a very different way to other movies. I think for starters there's such an emphasis on his name, which I don't think you get with other films. So I'm trying to think of where in Nolan trailers we've had like the cast appear as big names in the trailer instead of him, but it's always, you know, from the acclaimed director, from the visionary director of Dark Knight, Inception, etc., etc. Like it's like pushing him as if he is the draw in terms of the actual movie itself, in terms of the trailers.
And he's one of the few directors from a marketing perspective that can legitimately be used as a draw. I'm in a from
Spielberg,
on
that's
marketing
another
front.
one.
Spielberg and Cameron.
Cameron, yes.
Cameron's I think is the only other one where really kind of you could put them on par with the stars of the films. And I was looking back at Nolan, so some of the trailers in prep for this, and the only kind of ones kind of because there's really two sides to Nolan's marketing. There's kind of his And in the same way, you could talk about his films in a similar way. You know, you've got his stuff like Memento, The Prestige, following. You know, that's his first film. Sorry, I meant to say Insomnia, because he made that with Warner Brothers, with Steven Soderbergh as producer, if I am not mistaken.
Yes, and it was,
But
yeah.
those are slightly different in terms of they're more kind of your usual kind of mid-level studio programmer than what the trajectory that him and I think if there's one there's someone that really needs to you know, be highlighted in terms of credit for a lot of Nolan's campaigns. And it's someone called Massi Rafani, who is the executive vice president of creative advertising at Warner Brothers. He has worked with Nolan since Batman Begins, actually, on pretty much all of his campaigns. And he is pretty much the driving force, along with, although I was lucky enough to actually speak to him about my dissertation, and while I'm not allowed to say much about what was discussed, I will say that, you know, people think that, you know, Nolan, you know, is incredibly involved, and, you know, to be honest, he probably is, but I thought it's important to actually highlight that, you know, it's not just Nolan, you've got to have great people at studios like Warner Brothers who are able to, you know, work with these directors, and whenever they have the specific vision that pushes them out of the box, you know, then you can go for it. And that's one of the great things about Nolan's marketing campaigns, is that, especially in this, you know, landscape, you know, we're talking, you know, big, massive 150, 200 million blockbusters. They are, the Nolan films are the outliers. They're probably the only original outliers in terms of, because the other outliers that you could think of in terms of, you know, marketing that pushes the boundaries, those are the franchise titles. Think, you know, Marvel Avengers, think Star Wars, think James Bond even. Mm. You know, there's some things where the teams are, you know, MGM, Universal, you know, Barbara Broccoli, Michael G. Wilson, the producers, where they, like, push the boundaries a little bit and at the same time not go for the cliches that you would expect, like, from a marketing campaign. But it's worth noting, as I said, it's coming back to my initial point, is that there's that, you know, early era, like, maybe early Nolan, I don't know, but from Batman Begins, and skipping Prestige a little bit, because that was more kind of conventional, although there was this interesting interview from, there's another fantastic podcast called Trailer Geeks and Teaser Gods, which I would advise anyone listening to this to look up, which has some incredible interviews with creative executives and trailer editors here from Hollywood. And one of the guys that they interviewed recently was the editor behind the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood campaign for Quentin Tarantino. And he's done a lot of horror trailers before this at the trailer company Buller Jones. And he did The Prestige. And even then, he mentioned that he said, like, it was the usual Christopher Nolan thing of, there was very little of the film to work with. Even at that point, it was just after Batman Begins, he already began to establish kind of the status quo that you always get with his films in terms of secrecy and marketing.
Cryptic, you know, isn't in terms it? Of
it's very cryptic, but, you know, looking back, you know, you mentioned cast names. That popped up there. The cast names, you know, Christian Bale, Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson, they were all there. But then aside from Prestige, the only other films that have had cast names kind of up front, Inception, with Leo DiCaprio, of course, and Tenet, with John David Washington really front and center, at least on the trailers, not on the posters, unfortunately, but actually, yes, on the posters.
Yeah, and the posters all, yeah, it's all about John David Washington on, he's on it multiple times.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of the billing, his name, you know, his name, and that, of course, you know, the entire Tenet campaign is all about John David Washington's protagonist, but, you know, billing in terms of, you know, whose name is actually above the poster, like at the top of it, or at the head of a trailer, because it's not just a marketing thing, it's very contractual as well, you know, their agents pushing for their clients to be kind of top billed. Like, one of the things that people always complain about is, you know, when you have posters with multiple actors kind of in a certain order, and the names above are
above the right person. It's such a pet hate.
It's a pet hate, but unfortunately, it comes down to contracts. It really does come down to contracts in the way that they're negotiated for the billing and in terms of visuals as well. Like, there was this thing I'm just trying to remember for, like, what was it, Spider-Man Homecoming? Like, Robert Downey Jr. had to be that big, as he was on the almost absolutely shockingly terrible posters.
Yeah, I was about to say they were awful. Spider-Man Homecoming and the Spider-Man movies in general is one of the ones where I find that the fan art posters are so much better than the actual ones that Sony released.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true for almost everything. I mean, there is a certain they accomplish a different purpose, though. It's hard to say that they're better or not, because, you know, there's different purpose when you come in and, you know, when you cut a fan trailer or do a fan poster for a film, and you're approaching it from a certain love for the material, and you're trying to honor the material, While with actual marketing posters, they still have a job to do. And I think the best posters that when it comes to actual marketing ones are the ones that are able to combine both. And I think Nolan's campaigns are a brilliant example of materials, trailers, posters, what have you, that are able to combine both these sides, kind of honor the film, but also do their job. But at the same time, part of the reasons why they are able to do the job is that Chris Nolan is such a brand in his own right.
He is a brand.
And that's really such an important point because, if Nolan wasn't the brand that he was, they would not be able to get away with half the stuff they
No,
do.
it is very much it's him at the forefront. It's his name, and he is like a rock star in a way. It's his tour. I find it interesting, by the way, what you said about like the actors and the contractual agreements, because it just like in my day job, I work for Zavvi, and obviously we sell like DVDs and posters and all that, and we often get so many complaints about like the artwork on the if exclusive stories and stuff we do, and I didn't realize like how much it was down to contracts with actors. Like there was one where I can't remember which actor it was, but he didn't like the artwork that we initially designed because he looked a bit chubby. He wanted to be skinnier. So I did like it's funny how much these actors, it's either the actors or the agents, have like so much say in the way that these films are, like, I suppose, marketed, but like even the art itself or the images from it, it's wild, to be honest.
I mean, when you're dealing with people kind of on that level, they have to have approval. Like at the very least, approval. Or, there's this term when it comes to directors that's bandied about. It's meaningful consultation. That's what directors usually have when it comes to marketing materials. And there's several, schools of thought. And one of the interesting things that we learn on the course of the NFTS is that it depends from project to project. And some people, my tutors have one opinion about, how much directors should be involved. Like I have my own opinion. Like others that I'm with on this course have their own. And it's I mean, this is something that even on a practical level, one of the things that we do is because obviously the NFTS, they are very much renowned for their production-based courses. So they've got directors, screenwriters, and so we also work with, for example, when all those departments come together to make a film. Like all the first years come together to make some of the films. Like we get assigned as marketing executives of those projects. Like we commission the posters, commission the stills, we write the electronic press kit materials, the synopsis, the production notes, and they have a say. And one of the big tests is even at this student level, how do you manage that relationship? And how do you kind of be respectful of it? Do you completely, shut them out and just say, okay, like, leave me to it to a certain degree, which you have to kind of distance yourself from the project that you're working on, but also at the same time, at least from my experience, being on the same page as everyone in terms of what this film is and what this film should be and how it should be presented is that when you're on the same page, that's fantastic. But then, of course, there are cases, and I think it's kind of, when you've been following this for so long, kind of starts to become really clear when the film is so radically different from the way it's presented in a marketing perspective, then perhaps it's quite clear that, people weren't on the same page. The distributor releasing the film like thought it was one thing or thought that, they'd get more money positioning it one way, while the filmmaker is like, no, it's really this other thing. But then this other thing wouldn't bring you so much money if you position it as is. And that's always such a tricky debate, but no, people like Nolan and campaigns like that, they just operate in this field where they don't have to worry about that, it
No.
seems.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you said earlier about, such a secrecy about Nolan's trailers. We had Simon Brew on for Interstellar, and he says that he doesn't watch any teaser trailers at all, like nothing. He goes in completely blind. And I said, when it comes to Nolan, like I try and watch as much as I can before, just because I'm a massive fangirl and I just enjoy it. But even then, because it is so cryptic and secret, I still don't actually know what to expect when I go into the movie.
Same here. I mean, in terms of like my love of trailers prevents me from avoiding them, unless it's a film where you just end up not really having it at the time. I think was the most recent example of that for me. It was probably Unhinged, actually. Like, I saw that trailer once, like, when it came out, like, everyone was talking about it. Like, oh, the first big
Yeah.
movie, big, firstly, big, really big movie? Sure, Russell Crowe, but, I mean, come on, it's not like a studio film. Like, all due respect to the guys at Altitude, of course, but, this is
Yeah.
like, from in terms of following it, like, what the hell's been happening with cinema reopenings, that's a different level. But, Unhinged, that I saw that trailer like once, and then I saw the film a couple of days ago at a drive-in cinema, and it's just like, it's I see the appeal that when you come into it fresh. When people say like, oh, I'm gonna avoid absolutely everything for this film or that film, or like for Tenet or Inception or Interstellar or Dunkirk, and when they get the
Yeah.
payoff of seeing the film kind of all as intended, like without having the marketing, the thing that's presented to you and the way the film's positioned in the back of your mind, which a lot of the audiences do, and part of the reason why, there are things that happen in terms of, films underperforming or flopping, or, people, critics saying, oh my God, it's so good, the audience saying, no, it's absolutely terrible. It's that mismatch of expectations that's set by marketing. And so, yeah, from that perspective, it is, as a film fan, of course, I definitely see the use in tuning everything out, but I just can't as a trailer fan. I can't. I just love to devour all of it, and if it kind of bleeds into my film experience, like, I have to just deal with it.
Yeah, I think it's not Nolan related at all, but it just made me think then of, Suicide Squad. That film was edit like re-edited after the reaction to the trailer, which
Yeah,
it
that's the
seems
story.
which yeah, which I wouldn't have like thought would happen, but actually makes sense because, as you said, trailers build up some sort of expectation from the audience as to what this film will be. So actually, it does make sense. Like, Warner Brothers saw what the reaction was to trailer, and they loved all the pop music and all that. So they were like, right, let's re-edit the movie to meet this expectation, because there is nothing worse than a film, like basically either being crap compared to trailer or being completely different to how the trailer told me it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly that. And I'm just trying to think what's kind of the best example of that. Yeah, Suicide Squad is a great one because, it actually bled into the production process. But, like, as much as I love A24 and what they do, and their films, they are pretty much the poster child of that. Like, their horror films, they are the poster child of mismatched expectations when it comes to the marketing saying a film up is one thing, but it being completely different, part of which is seems to be inherent problems, in the way the horror genre is perceived.
Yeah.
But that's if there's one example of that issue that we're talking about here. Yeah, it's that. It's filmed like The Witch, It Comes at Night, Hereditary to a certain degree, Midsommar.
Midsommar, I was about to say Midsommar, like I knew what to expect because I had seen Hereditary and I knew A24, but if you showed that to someone, with no knowledge, you showed in the trailer, I imagine the movie's very different to what the trailer built up to be. But I agree with you, that's very much a horror thing. Just to go back to Nolan, one of the other things I was thinking of in terms of how his marketing stands out is, we're going to get on to Tenet later, but it's you must go see this in a cinema and you must go see it in IMAX, which I do see a lot of films do push the IMAX, like, for the ultimate experience, go see it in IMAX, like Mission Impossible Fallout, I think was an example, and even, some of the big superhero movies. But for Nolan, it does seem to be very much the case of.
Yeah, with Nolan, like, it's quite clear that IMAX is part of his artistic vision. And to a certain degree, and we are really kind of seeing this laid bare with this whole Tenet situation, he sees the big screen, the actual, releasing a film into cinema, the whole distribution structure of releasing the film into cinemas first and into cinemas only for, 90 days in the US, 16 weeks in the UK. He sees artistic value in that. It's part of his artistic vision, which is why he pushes so hard for, for his films to be released, in this way. And he wants to make sure as well, to his credit, that the quality of what we're seeing on the big screen is absolutely top notch, which it's that quality, the formats that he goes out on, 70 mil IMAX, celluloid film in general. It, an IMAX, it's and even digital IMAX, it's so important to him, and this is part of why his trailers do break the rules to a certain degree with how you expect the film to be marketed today, because they are very much reliant on, the theatrical experience, even within trailers.
Yeah.
And there's no better example of that than his IMAX prologues, which for
Yes.
those listening who don't, who are unaware what he's been doing with pretty much every single one of his films that he's shot on IMAX, is putting the first 5 6 minutes or a montage of kind of part of the opening act and like an extended trailer on the front of a big release coming like 6 months beforehand. So in the case, it started with The Dark Knight in 2008. So that was the first feature film, as I'm sure many know, that was actually shot using IMAX 70mm cameras. And so he put the opening bank robbery prologue as a trailer in front of I Am Legend, which came out the previous December. And he repeated this again with Dark Knight Rises. Then for Interstellar, he did something interesting, which was in museum cinemas, because it's a science fiction film, and one of the big selling points of Interstellar was that it's very much rooted in real science. Like the whole idea behind the film came from Kip Thorne, the scientist Kip Thorne, and so therefore he wanted Nolan and Warner Bros. They want to highlight that side of it. So in those science museum based cinemas, which a lot of them have Nolan's preferred 70mm projection format, they have those
Yeah.
projections and would be showing the film. They cut a special 4.5 minute piece, which a lot of it is almost documentary-esque. People talk about one of the big inspirations for Interstellar being Ken Burns, that famous American documentary filmmaker. So kind of the
Yeah.
first, two-thirds of that piece is stills from Interstellar, from the film, kind of presented in this way, and they're intercut with quotes from people from the space industry. They had Elon Musk in there. They had Kip Thorne, of course. They had Stephen Hawking. They had Gene Kranz, who was the famous flight director at NASA during the Apollo program. They had Neil deGrasse Tyson, and they had JFK. That's the big thing. They opened and closed off that reel with JFK's big moon speech, and then kind of the last 30, 40 seconds of that trailer. And so you just imagine you're watching it in an IMAX 70mm cinema. And when JFK, he obviously cut Nolan, the editors, or whoever cut that trailer, they obviously cut out the "we choose to go to the moon" bit, because it's more about space exploration. That's the idea. So therefore, kind of the exploration of space will go ahead whether we like it or not, and it is one of the great adventures of all time. Cut to the rocket taking off in Interstellar, full IMAX. You see the big space station, the Endurance. You see Miller's planet. You see the ice planet. You get all of these
Yeah.
stunning full IMAX visuals, including even the black hole. There's some stuff that has never been seen in the trailers by that point. And also to note, it's one of the only trailers. There's only two, the first teaser and this one, that were accompanied by Hans Zimmer's score for the film. That
Of
actually
course,
gave
yeah.
us a taste of what it would sound like. So Interstellar was such a fascinating kind of one-off in that front. And Dunkirk, they did this with Rogue One, was a similar way. Now they played around a
Yeah.
bit with, it wasn't like the opening scene of the film. They played around a bit with the first act because they wanted to introduce the triptych structure, land, air, and sea. So it's kind of some of those opening moments. And of course, Tenet with Rise of
Rise of
Skywalker.
Skywalker, yeah.
Back to classic Nolan mode of the intense, and now we know for sure, because it was confirmed in the making of in the previous that we've seen on the making of book, it's the opening scene of the film, the big Kiev Opera House siege sequence.
Do you make sure that you go and see the prologues? Because I know I do. Like, I went to see Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol to purely for the first 6 minutes of Dark Knight Rises. Turns out, actually, Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol is so good
Same
on
here,
IMAX,
basically.
but I like Rise of Skywalker. I actually had already seen an IMAX at the press screening, obviously without the Tenet prologue, and I didn't. The film's okay, but I was like, I'll pay the £15 to go see IMAX again just for the Tenet prologue. And then every now and then in cinema, I was just like, what is this? As soon as like Sin Copy, comes up, it's like, this isn't a trailer, and I'm just there like bouncing in my seat with excitement. I think it's really interesting. I can't think, you probably know better than me, but I can't think of any other films that do that in terms of like the IMAX prologue or like an IMAX teaser.
There's been some that have kind of attempted to follow in Nolan's and Warner Brothers' footsteps. Like, they were, actually, it's quite interesting. Yeah, we brought up Dark Knight Rises, Ghost Protocol, is that they did a reciprocal thing a year later with Hobbit 1 and Star Trek Into Darkness, which J.J. Abrams shot on IMAX as well.
Yes.
So the opening scene of that film, and it's probably the longest such IMAX preview, it's like 11 minutes long. They screen that entire opening scene of the film, which is like in a similar kind of almost James Bond or, you know, Nolan-esque way. It's a separate kind of action sequence. You know, you're just thrown in there with, you know, Kirk and Spock and Bones and everyone. And so, yeah, that's the other kind of big example. So they did the reverse. So obviously, before it was Warner Brothers' piece attached to a Paramount film. Now it's a Paramount piece attached to a Warner Brothers film.
Yeah.
So they did that. And there's been a few. Even Marvel's done it a couple of times. They, for Captain America Winter Soldier, most notably, they had, there were, you know, there was this film, which I still haven't seen, you know, there's this Need for Speed movie a few years ago with Aaron Need Paul. Need for Speed.
Oh my God, yes. But car racing one, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on the video game. Saw that. Neither have I, but they had the opening scene of Winter Soldier. On that.
Oh, really?
No, it's an IMAX exclusive, but like if you went to see it in like internationally, like in the UK, because obviously Disney was somehow involved in that film. At that point, yeah, they put that that on there as a trailer. Like it was like 11 minutes long. It was like whole, you know, opening scene, like him obviously Captain America meeting Sam Wilson in Washington D.C. and then them going off to that the Marine Star. It's that whole sequence. They played that. So Marvel's done it.
That's interesting.
Most recently, First Man did it. First Man did this. For those that don't know, the moon landing itself was shot on IMAX cameras on that film. And one of the disappointing things is that we never, in the UK, we never got to see it properly. Because they didn't make any 70mm prints of the film. At that time, the only cinema at the moment, the only IMAX in the UK at the moment that has, you know, the traditional, you know, square aspect ratio and the laser digital projection that can use that full screen is actually in Manchester. You know, the view print works, which is where I was planning to go see No Time to Die before lockdown happened. But at the time, that renovation didn't happen at Printworks. And so there was, without any 70mm prints, there was no way to see that in the UK. Like, to see it properly. That's a slight aside, but basically, they took advantage of that. And so what they did is there's this one of the most intense sequences in First Man is the Gemini 8 sequence, where obviously Neil Armstrong, Ryan Gosling, he goes up in the Gemini 8 rocket, but then it all spins out of control in orbit. And the launch, the part of the scene where they launch, and you always just stay on Gosling in the cockpit, you don't see outside of it. They put that as a trailer in front of Mission Impossible Fallout in the US and IMAX. They used that as a preview, and then in a similar way that, you know, you would for an IMAX prologue for a Nolan film. And they concluded, of course, big reveal, Gosling stepping out onto the moon and just goes into full screen IMAX like that.
Oh,
so
that must have been something.
Yeah, that was something. And there have been a few films that kind of borrowed from, you know, what Warner's has established here with the IMAX stuff.
That's interesting. I didn't even know that. Even like Captain America did it and stuff like that. The only ones I suppose bothered to go see is Nolan's. But why do you think like the IMAX prologues are so successful? Like, we both obviously go and see them. And make a point of going to go see them. But so we, you know, there must be others like us in the world.
I mean, it's less about, like, there's a combo of things. I mean, whenever you try and do something like this, that becomes a selling point for the film. And it's worth noting, for Tenet and for Dunkirk, like, the intention never was for people to find out in advance about them.
Like, yes, yeah.
That never was.
People do, though.
People do, though. Like, I do, like... like, for sure, for Dunkirk, they released a list of venues that played it. But for Tenet, they never, ever officially acknowledged that, oh my god, it's actually a thing. They never put out a list of venues on the website. They never put out on the social media, like, go see Rise of Sky, or go visit IMAX, your nearest IMAX, to see the opening 6 minutes of Tenet. They never made a big deal out of it. And interestingly enough, you know, for Dunkirk, I even, you know, went, like, the day of when I was due to see the film, at midnight screening at the BFI in 70mm. Actually, yeah, they made 70mm prints of Rogue One. And that was the other funny thing. So when I went down there and I asked, like, are you guys showing the Dunkirk thing? And then the manager there was like, well, we were just testing this thing that's 5 minutes and 20 seconds long, and you're going to see it tonight, but I don't know whether you are going to see it tonight. It was just absolutely hilarious. And one of the things that was noted there is that, like, it's meant to be a surprise. A quote that really stuck with me is that it seems like Nolan wanted people to discover this organically. That it's not an event that people rush to. So when people sit down, like, as you would, you know, to watch a film like Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, and you see the trailers, but then you see this thing.
Yeah,
it's not
at first. You don't know what it is.
Yeah, you don't,
because it's like, what? It just seems to be going on for quite a long time now. This isn't Star Wars, I think.
Which somewhat backfired in the case of Tenet. Like, there was a bit of backlash at the time because that sequence was so intense. Like, come on, I mean, we're talking of a hostage situation. Based, turns out, now we know from interviews with Nolan, it is based on that real life theater. Hostage situation in Moscow in 2003, the Nordost thing. And it's intense, even though it's rated like 12A, PG-13. Like, for a younger audience of Star Wars, like, there were some cinemas that had to put it at the end because of all the parent complaints.
Oh, really?
Okay. Or had to put...
Yeah, it did backfire.
It did backfire slightly, but still the idea remained in that people would just discover this organically, and it's rather than being an event that draws people in. Like, people discover it, and I get why, because it's the prologues are one of the pieces of marketing, one of the few pieces of marketing in general, like a clip from a film like this, that can really get across what the film actually is going to be like, tonally.
Yeah.
Can actually represent what the film is going to be like. And so, therefore, it does the double job of making people aware that, you know, Tenet. This is Tenet. Although, one of the stupid things is that they did not put from director Christopher Nolan anywhere, which I get why on the one hand, but on the other would have helped lessen the confusion.
Yeah, yeah.
At least, you know, when they did this for First Man, they actually, you know, they actually put in some copy, like, you know, experience it in IMAX from director Damien Chazelle. You know, they made it more of a marketing piece, while for Nolan it's just like a clip. And the title of the film at the end, and you're just slightly dumbfounded by it. But again, like, although we make stuff like this, and by extension, you know, when this similar thing happened with the very first Tenet teaser, which came out a year ago now with Hobbs and Shaw initially in the States, you know, that was never meant to be an event in the way that it was. It was in the similar way meant to be discovered organically. And it's not meant to be, and although with the prologue, you know, kind of, if you do hype it up, you still get, you know, this is six incredibly intense minutes of a film. But with a teaser like we got a year ago for Tenet, like, if you hyped it up so much, you know, you'd think that the teaser is a letdown, because it shows so little, if you remember that piece.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And it sort of makes sense why they never put it online. Because this sort of thing, just, you know, you can't put it online. You, like, in today's world, you know, you have to have, the first trailer that you put out, it has to be, you know, the one that would generate the most views. And so, like, why would you put out the first trailer that you put out online be, like, a 30, 40 second thing that shows absolutely nothing and that generates the most views? Isn't that a bit kind of paradoxical? And that's where a lot of distributors and studios have been kind of reckoning with. That's why we really see teaser trailers very rarely now, like proper teaser trailers, as we like seen in the 90s.
I was about to ask about teaser trailers because they seem to be a thing like the past few years, but thinking about, I was trying to think of an example recently and I can't, because it used to be like a 5-10 second clip and then like trailer out tomorrow, and people either hate, it was like a hate or love thing. I think people either like loved it because it's like, right, this is like a little snippet, now I'm excited to get a trailer, but people were also like, just release the whole damn trailer, why don't you?
I mean, we're slightly talking about different things here in that, you know, those are trailer teasers. Like,
teasers.
Yeah, there's a difference, obviously, between the teaser trailer, which is, you know, the sort of trailer that, you know, like we've seen with, I think, you know, the last decade, the quintessential examples of teaser trailers of the last decade are the Nolan ones. Like, you know, with Inception, with Dunkirk, you know, survival is victory, you know, with Tenet, you know, time has come for a new protagonist, time has come for a new kind of mission. Or, you know, even the Dark Knight one in 2008 that had no footage and it was just audio, dialogue from the film. But, you know, those trailers are really kind of, they work the way they do because they are intended to be seen by people sitting in a dark room, you know, when you don't know that it's coming. While, on the other hand, now, how do we discover trailers? Like, we either anticipate them a lot, or, you know, we see, like, trailer out today or trailer out tomorrow. So there's either that or you're just scrolling through Instagram, scrolling through Twitter, scrolling through Facebook, and you just see it. And a teaser that just, you know, starts with a Warner Brothers logo and John David Washington walking towards that glass. That's not going to catch your attention in those 5 seconds that are so crucial. It's just not. But when you're sitting in a dark cinema, it will. Because you're just wondering, what is that? It's that kind of mystery about it that is afforded to you when you have the big screen to work with. And I have to presume that's why Nolan likes, you know, having those very theatrical campaigns. And by, I mean theatrical, I mean not just, you know theatricality, but in terms of actual cinema marketing and making that a big deal, like to the point of the first full online trailer for Tenet that came out in December that had experienced the trailer in cinemas. When do you ever see that in a trailer? Never. Like, have you, like, this is the first, like, this is a groundbreaking thing. Like, no one else has done that. No one else is going to be able to do that in the future because Nolan's the only one that believes in the traditional theatrical distribution, exhibition, what have you, and experience so much is that he's able to push for that. And it's just like, it breaks everything that, you know, even I learned on the course about how to market a film. And yet, they still do it.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I remember when that came out, like, everyone was like, experience in cinema, I was like, it just, the internet was just like, what is, like, this never happens. But you're right, it's because he's the only one who can do it, because after all, he believes in the cinematic experience, which is interesting. Just thought we'd talk a bit about Nolan's trailers. I actually asked people on our Twitter for their favourite trailers. We got a few responses. Cameron Frew said Dark Knight Rises, the third trailer. Still makes him feel hyped now. He says the music, the scale, the fear surrounding Bane, and the actual sense of finality, so good. And then Scott J. Davis replied saying, goosebumps every time. I think for me, that's one of my personal favourite trailers. Like, The Dark Knight was my, like, turning point in terms of falling in love with cinema. So you can imagine how hyped I was for The Dark Knight Rises. But I, like, do recall seeing that trailer on the big screen and being like, wow, this is an event to look forward to.
I never did get to see those Dark Knight Rises trailers on the big screen, I think, actually. I only saw them online. But that, you know, third trailer, Dark Knight Rises, yeah, I absolutely adore it. Like, it's the fact that, and that's the great thing about Nolan's trailers, they show so much, but it's actually so little. So you feel, they feel like it's a lot, but, you know, they don't tell you anything. And there's something about, there's a very somber tone to the Dark Knight Rises trailers. Particularly that third one, it's that, you know, piano music, which, you know, turns out it is, you know, Zimmer was involved with that. And that just, you know, builds up into this epic, you know, when the cast come out, like, a fire will rise, the epic conclusion, kind of hope is lost and what have you. It's just like, you know, this is it, this is the end. And when, you know, a trailer or trailer campaign, you know, takes advantage of a sense of finality that comes with, you know, to an end to a trilogy or an end to a franchise. Like, we've seen this with Endgame. We have not seen this with No Time to Die, and that's one of my big pet peeves with that whole thing. It's like, that's like Bond's Dark Knight Rises. Like, go lean into it.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
But
push back. It's Craig's last. Yeah.
And it is meant to be the finale to that story that began in Casino Royale all those years ago. So, you know, lean into it. This is like the, this is the end. Like, it's not the end of Bond, but like, come on, if people can get away with rebooting Batman and Spider-Man however many times, people can accept, like, going, this is the last Bond, this is the, inverted commas, last Bond film, and then, oh, it's a new guy, and the whole thing starts again, because it's the same thing, same damn thing. Anyway, yeah, Dark Knight Rises is that, it's really that tone that makes that trade and that whole campaign really work. And I actually have a bit of a memory when it, that's connected to that trailer, because the way it launched was really, really interesting. It's it was actually done by the same company that did the Dragon Tattoo thing with the Scavenger
Hunt. Okay, so the viral campaign.
Yeah, they did a very similar thing in that they put up a whole bunch of coordinates, like a special dossier of where the Batman was said to be spotted. And so they were all over the world. And what you had to do is take a... They, you know those chalk symbols in The Dark Knight Rises? The chalk bat symbols that were all around Gotham?
But yeah.
They had those all in cities all around the world. And so people had to take a picture of that and tweet it to with their location to the official Twitter account at that time. And if anyone's listening, look up TDKR07202012. That's basically the account on the website that was set up connected with this whole thing. And every time a location was found, the website would unlock a frame of the trailer. Like, if you go on the website, you would see, like, obviously a virtual 35mm reel of the trailer. And as more people were tweeting those bat symbols, the more and more frames of that trailer would unlock.
That's very cool.
And then, when all the frames were unlocked, the trailer was officially released online. And I remember, like, staying up until 2-3 a.m. following all of this. Like, just seeing and then trying to pull some of the frames and do and put together a GIF, you know, seeing how it all comes together. It's just, was fun. That was a really cool one. And it's unfortunate that...
It's interactive, isn't it? Which is, I like that a lot. I didn't know about that, to be honest, when it came to Dark Knight Rises.
And it's unfortunate that... That hasn't been repeated. Like, it's not just a Nolan thing, and like that viral campaigns like this have stopped by and large, but they have. And it's and like now, obviously, in the sense of, you know, lockdown, quarantine, COVID, like, obviously it's not a feasible or even a safe thing to do, but at least, you know, do something in world in terms of online. Like, I'd love to know, you know, a bit more about, you know, what the hell is this organization, Tenet? I mean,
Tenet.
We got close, you know, to that. There was this, the official film website for Tenet. I had played around a bit with kind of voice activated stuff. So to actually open the website, you had to...
An audio experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, you had to, into your mic, you know, the word. Like, it starts, prompts you, like, all I have for you is a word, and you have to reply with Tenet. And then on the homepage, like, it's a bit of an Easter egg when you say, we live in a twilight world, which is the code word that John David Washington's character gives to the contact they have to extract in the opening scene of the film, the IMAX prologue. When you say, we live in a twilight world, then a screen comes up with, there are no friends at dusk, which is his reply. So therefore, there's a little bit of that on the website, but, you know, it's not like you can unlock an exclusive trailer with that. You can't, annoyingly.
Yeah. Talking a bit about, I suppose, viral campaigns, in terms of replies to the tweet, Tom, my boyfriend Tom, also friend of the podcast, I suppose, said, not a trailer, but I remember the marketing for The Dark Knight, in particular, the Empire magazine cover with the Joker. You know, I spent ages devouring that feature. I think one thing we haven't spoken about yet is how... like interviews and features, and like, I suppose it's more online now, but back in the day, like, particularly magazine covers, you know, they are such a big part of the marketing as well.
Yeah,
I would say, like, back in the day, in terms of magazines, like magazines, like, I still buy Empire, Total Film, etc. Like, I'm still very much into. It's exciting when, like, I bought Total Film just for the Tenet cover alone. Like, it is still a big thing, but as I said, it's more online now.
But you know what?
But media has a big role.
Yeah, but you know what? For Tenet, like, we've seen no online interviews. Like, everything that we've seen is kind of magazine print based. And, like, it's quite obvious, and there's been, you know, rumors going around the press community for years, like, is that Nolan apparently has this a bit of a disdain for online. For, you know, online blogs and websites, there's kind of been rumors floating around, like, people discussing, you know, on Twitter and so forth about that. So it's kind of.
Wouldn't surprise me, to be honest, because he's a bit of a traditionalist, I suppose, in terms of like the big
He's
three
very
sports. I can
analog.
see him very much.
He's very analog. And so.
That's it.
That's a good way to describe Nolan. And. But yeah, even now, you know, all of the interviews that we've seen so far, like with Nolan, with the cast, like there's so much stuff. All of it is with print magazines all around the world, which, you know, makes things interesting in terms of, okay, with the situation happening now, with, you know, when the film's going to be released, you know, how do you handle the press? How do you handle the press for that? How do you balance all those things? Like the Warner's PR department has a hell of a challenge on their hands.
Feel so bad for them, so bad for them. But it's interesting, like now you say that, I can't think of any big online interviews and stuff with like, I've seen like profile pieces of like the stars, like Elizabeth Debicki, etc. But it's all like Vanity Fair, and it's even if it's online pieces, it's still very much print orientated as
Yeah,
well. Because
exactly.
they like Vanity Fair is a magazine, but I don't actually remember the Empire cover for The Dark Knight because I was too young. Basically, I think I must have been like 11 or 12. But going back to trailers, the most popular choice in terms of responses to the tweet was Inception, the first teaser for Inception, and I think for me, that's one of my personal favorites as well. You know, like the first shot of Paris folding over itself, and it was just very surreal.
Of
And
course.
the atmosphere was created as well by that music. And as a like, I liked the fact that it pushed Leonardo DiCaprio's name because, like, I'm a Leonardo DiCaprio fan. So I was like, oh, Christopher Nolan and Leonardo DiCaprio and whatever's going on visually, like, I'm into it.
Look, if there's a quintessential, like the definitive Nolan trailer campaign, it's Inception. I
Inception,
mean, it's said
yeah.
that it's probably, I would say, the most iconic trailer campaign of the last decade because it set the
Okay.
tone for all the trailers to come. And if there's one thing out of that set the tone, is of course the big, you know, bruh, the big horn, you know,
Yeah.
boom.
Rob.
Like, you can.
Which is in everything now.
And you know what? It started with Inception. You know, it really did start with Inception, and just goes to show the influence that campaign had, and the fact that people still refer to that, you know, the full final trailer for that film, that with that iconic track "Mind Heist," you know, and those taglines, "Your mind's the scene of the crime," and people
Yeah.
always refer back to that trailer and, you know, listen back to it because it's such an iconic thing, and the way that, just, you know, there's this marriage of visuals and editing and music. It's just absolutely incredible across the four pieces that were put out for that film. So, and obviously, you know, you had that initial teaser, which is really interesting. I was checking out this revisiting this story earlier about how that came together. It's on IndieWire, because obviously people were joking about that big horn sound came from Hans Zimmer, but it wasn't from Hans Zimmer. It was developed by a sound designer named Mike Zarin, who is a trained music composer, who was commissioned by obviously the trailer editors. By the way, for those who are kind of keeping track of all of this stuff, a company called BLT Communications, they did the entire campaign for Inception. So all the trailers, a lot of the TV spots for it as well. So if there's people who you need to credit along with Nolan for, you know, for Inception, firstly, it's Massi Refani from Warner Brothers. But also it's BLT because, you know, when it comes to, you know, who really makes a trailer work, like, it's not just the studio, it's not just the director. People think that directors cut their own trailers. Some do, some don't. And Nolan probably
Yeah.
is one of the, like, there are, like, for example, the first Interstellar teaser, you know, with the archive footage. Lee Smith, his editor, Nolan's editor on Interstellar, is officially credited as a co-editor on that trailer. So, you know, that probably has a more direct involvement, but, you know, you have to recognize that, you know, it's not just Nolan, it's not just Warner Brothers, but there's also entire agencies, there's entire companies, entire, you know, people working on this stuff to make sure it's just absolutely right before it goes out into the world. And, you know, they did this fantastic job with Inception, and they were talking about, you know, how that whole thing came together in that. In that, you know, they got a brief from Warner Brothers. You know, the concept of the I'm just reading from that piece now. The concept of the teaser was taking a journey on a bullet train through the levels of the subconscious. And so they were playing around with that a little bit. But then Nolan came in with a track from the Dark Knight score that he wanted the trailer music to be based on. And as part of that, he also wanted kind of a sound that Zarin describes as a Tibetan gong that could just clear the room, you know, just an iconic signature sound. And that's combining that with what was being played around with at the time by probably by Hans, but also because in the script, you know, the script for Inception is obviously, you know, published, you can buy it online and in bookshops. You know, the whole thing with the Edith Piaf song, Non Je Ne Regrette Rien, being slowed down and being used as the countdown to the kick, that was in the script. And so they took that and they ran with it, and from that they came up with this, boom. It came, and that's the thing, you know, you think back to it, of course it makes sense now that it's become this iconic thing that's forever associated with Inception, because it part of that came from the script. So it's just so organically integrated, and now we see, you know, everything, you know, coming in with iconic sounds. And we see this with, you know, every trailer campaign, like a lot of interviews that I listen to with editors, like they mention that, you know, there are some campaigns now where you have to try and find an iconic sound or sound effect that's forever going to be associated with the film. And, you know, obviously Inception is the biggest example of that. And it started that, arguably. Yeah, and, you know, now we're kind of slightly coming back full circle 10 years later with Tenet, in that there's an iconic motif from Ludwig Göransson's score, like the whole boom, 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 that closes the every single one of the trailers. Like when the logo comes up, it's got that, you know, either 3 or 5 note theme to it. And, you know, if you go back and listen to the most recent Tenet trailer, you'll really recognize it. And so even then, again, the thing about it that makes Inception so iconic, and, you know, we'll see in terms of what legacy, what impact the Tenet campaign will leave, you know, for the next decade. It really is, you know, breaking ground and, you know, digging into the script and, you know, putting out those ideas, you know, to make a stamp, to put a stamp on things, and then for the trailer to put a stamp on the wider world, which Inception did. So, yeah, as I said, I think it's, you know, both Inception the film is Nolan's masterpiece, arguably, like in my opinion, although my favorite film of his is Interstellar, but Inception is the quintessential Nolan film. And we will see whenever it's safe to see Tenet, whether that film will take Inception's crown in that regard.
Exactly. It'll be interesting. I think I don't want to get too much into Tenet, because that's like a whole other podcast, let's be honest, in terms of the way that's being marketed. But I do want to talk about the whole Fortnite thing, because it just seemed so left field in a way. Like, I don't really like have much feelings about it. I remember when it was announced that it was debuting on Fortnite, it was unexpected. I don't think anyone saw that coming, but then think about it, it makes sense that I know Warner Brothers have a deal with Fortnite in terms of, it's not just Nolan movies, but they have like watch parties on there in terms of like their whole catalogue. And they're very much, I think, trying to get to that younger audience. But also, Chris Nolan's all about getting people to the cinema. Like, why not target a whole new audience with Fortnite? You know, like, he knows, like, I'd say he knows, like, Warner Brothers knows that, like, or it's like older film nerds will be going to like watch the trailer anyway, so just hit a young audience in a different way. But it was bizarre
at first. But there was this quote from the CEO of Epic Games, the developer of Fortnite at the time. Obviously they saw a lot of the skepticism, like, from the film. He was like, what the hell, right? But then they put they put out this thing like, the idea came from Christopher Nolan, in that because cinemas are closed, what is the closest thing to a virtual cinema environment? A virtual communal experience. And that's what Fortnite is, love it or hate it. I mean, you know, by that time when they did the trailer premiere and those watch parties, which, to clarify, were all Christopher Nolan films that came out of the Tenet trailer premiere, and it's all arguably part of the marketing for Tenet, what they've been doing on that front. It really, because they did concerts in Fortnite. I think, Travis Scott was there. They did like a live thing with Travis Scott. And then, Nolan or the Warner Bros. Marketing team, they must have even heard about this, but really kind of the draw here, aside from obviously the obvious, marketing plus, like you're marketing to the audience that's on Fortnite all the time. But it fits in with Nolan's MO because he's all about the communal experience. And like there is nothing like aside from like a virtual reality application called Big Screen VR, there is nothing else aside from Zoom or whatever other streaming platforms that allow for that communal kind of interaction. We've seen Netflix party. Obviously, there's live tweets and when things go live on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram, stuff like we obviously come in and comment. But with Fortnite, it's a physical environment. You've got your own virtual avatar. So when I went on to Fortnite Gate, to be clear, I was watching a stream of someone going to Fortnite. Thankfully, someone had set up like in the full HD, like full quality. Like you're there among with like 20, 30 other people. You're just there. It's an actual physical experience. Well, almost physical, obviously within the virtual world of the game, and you've got this screen, and you've got Jeff Keighley, which, by the way, that's another interesting thing between link between the games world and the film world, is that Jeff Keighley, for those who don't know, he is a really famous games journalist. He's the face of video games, essentially. Like he hosts the game equivalent of the Oscars every year with the Game Awards. His dad is one of the co-founders of IMAX, and the. So,
Interesting.
like, they've got that connection as well, which is really, really fascinating. And obviously, given Nolan's love of IMAX. And so, therefore, when cinemas close, like, what's the only place you can do a physical communal experience in, almost physical? It's Fortnite. Its reach, its appeal. The fact that it's, the only thing that took away from the experience for me was there was some audio glitches at the start, so like there was some holding background music from Fortnite itself that was playing over the trailer for a little bit, and people were just throwing stuff at the screen. That's the other thing that was just really stupid. That was really stupid. Like, thank God they put that trailer out online like minutes after it premiered in Fortnite. But you know what? You know what? If Fortnite had a virtual reality version, like I have one of those Google Cardboard, foldable headsets that I just you can like get like a
Oh, the, I think they're called Pixel or something. Yeah, I
yeah
know what you're on about.
and if Fortnite had a VR version like that, I would be all over this, and I would like be like, yes, oh my God, this is the like a virtual giant outdoor screen, this is amazing. Right? So and I was even thinking about it recently, like, if cinemas are to be closed for, the future, could virtual reality step in and replicate that experience to a certain degree? Especially because, with virtual reality, it's quite expensive to get your hands on good equipment. And that's, a good barrier to entry if you're trying to not take away from cinemas. So, like, you could have a film play in cinemas, and instead of, releasing on iTunes or whatever, one of the big problems, challenges that we've seen with, film new blockbusters coming to the home, straight to VOD, is the fact that, it's just, on iTunes it costs, $19.99. Like, do the economics work? And the closest thing to making the economics work was this thing, which obviously Nolan was completely, on the record against, Screening Room, which was set up by Sean Parker, who founded Napster. But that required a special, like, £150 box. I had to plug into your TV and you'd stream the movies from there. But now, of course, we've got Fire Sticks, we've got Apple TV, we've got Chromecast, you can't really do that. And the closest thing that we have to that we can also replicate the communal experience with, it's virtual reality. I think there's a lot of way, there's just so much potential for the lengths that you can go with VR. And, in the wake of what's happening with Tenet, I wonder if Nolan's kind of exploring that to a certain degree. Especially because, he's been there with the Fortnite premiere of the trailer.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what the future leads is like. Obviously, COVID's been difficult for cinemas and studios, etc., but it will inevitably change things, whether it's good for the better or the worse for the future. I think I said there's a lot of like, we won't get into it, but there's a lot of tension around Tenet, because I think some people disagree with how it's been marketed as the film to welcome people back to the cinema. I get it. I get why it's been marketed that way. But, and also, like, no one's, like, pressured to see it in a cinema. Like, that's up to everyone's personal choice. But, yeah, it is.
Is there a choice, though? Like, is it if you can either only see it in cinemas or wait until Christmas?
That's what I mean, but it's their personal choice whether they decide to see it in cinemas or wait. That's what I'm saying. It's like, no one's forcing you to go to the cinema to go see a movie if you don't want to go. But I think a lot of people like me who are nervous about going back to cinema, like, I am very much obviously a Nolan day one. Like, I will be there on day one, but I'm still quite conflicted in terms of how safe it would be. I think at the time of recording recently, they just made face masks mandatory and everything. So immediately, like, that makes me feel a lot better. But I think there's a lot of people like me who are a bit torn, if that makes sense, about it all.
Like, same here. Like, for me personally, I know you could go on for ages, you know, arguing about all this stuff, we've seen with all the pieces and articles. Yeah, it's such a complex discussion. Like, for me personally, it's just like, you know, the situation, and unfortunately, it's out of the industry's control for the most part, because it all, you know, comes down to, you know, how the individual governments around the world are responding to COVID. And, you know, what's their definition of, you know, safe? But the problem is the industry has very little to go on except for, you know, what the government deem is safe. But, you know, I personally, and I hate that, firstly, that we are put as, you know, Nolan fans, you know, as one people who would go day one into this position, in that we have to essentially choose between arguably our health and, you know, still, you know, being part of this discussion, you know, enjoying a Christopher Nolan film in the way that it was intended. What I will say, what I'm really, really hoping for is that they allow for outdoor and drive-in screenings. Because if there's one kind of cinema thing that's come out of lockdown and, like, lots in full force and it's been doing incredibly successfully and, you know, arguably it's safer than being in an indoor air-conditioned cinema with all the various safety measures that may or may not even be enforced in the way that we want for it to be truly safe, not to mention, you know, concessions. Yeah, it's outdoor and drive-in screens.
Did you see Unhinged at a drive-in?
Yes, I did see Unhinged at a drive-in. And that's one of the things I was really excited about because it's the first
new release, right?
First new release to ever play at a drive-in here in the UK. And actually, there are currently, at the time of recording, there are only two drive-ins playing new releases, and that's obviously the one I went to, which is it's called The Drive-In. It's in Enfield at Meridian Water, and the other one is at Alexandra Palace from the guys who did Rooftop Film Club, and they've gone out drive-in cinema there, and they're doing Unhinged as well. But obviously, I think all credit there has to also really go to the distributor Altitude, because it's only them. So only them with Blackwater Abyss, Unhinged, and Stage Mother that they've been allowing drive-ins to play those films.
I mean, good analogy for that.
So the real question is, does that provide a good, you know? If Warners are anxious about putting this film into drive-ins, which, you know, for the record, in terms of the US, you know, there are plenty of drive-ins who are going to be expecting to get this film day one in the States. Possibly in Australia as well, but the difference obviously between there and here is that for us it's a new thing. So I would obviously imagine Warners has a lot of trepidation about the idea, but hopefully, and you know, when I went to see Unhinged yesterday at the drive-in, it was almost actually quite full.
Okay,
that's good. People were going. That specific venue has been on the top of the box office charts, so, you know, so apparently, at least for the first couple of weeks after cinemas reopened, like, it's been the highest grossing single cinema, and they're showing like 3-4 films a day and doing kind of live concerts as well, and some kids shows as well. Like, for them to get Tenet, that would just be an easy win for everyone. So my fingers are crossed in that they're going to be venues like they're going to be able to open the film on the 26th of August. But, you know, I was thinking about this really recently as well. You know, worst case scenario that it doesn't, I'm just going to buy that screenplay book as soon as possible. because I would rather, you know, just at least read it in the way that Nolan's written it, the script, as opposed to just coming across spoilers online.
Yeah, because this is a thing, it's like, if people choose, like, I still think I will. I mean, as I mentioned to you before the call, Manchester's just entered lockdown again due to a spike. So I don't even know if a cinema will be open here for me to be able to see it. But, like, with online, like, it, like, part of my job is I do social media for a company. I have to be online all the time in the world of film and TV. There's no way I can avoid spoilers. Even by muting a word on Twitter, etc., I just, you know, it's virtually impossible. The only way to really avoid spoilers is by not being online. So, which is just one of the main, many, many troubles of social media. But I get why Wonder Woman was nervous about driving cinema. It's like, I'm just gutted, but I just don't drive or have a bike, or I just can't get to a drive-in because it's something I would like to experience.
Yeah, that, I mean, in terms of, you know, distance. Because, you know, actually, it's worth noting that that drive-in that I saw Unhinged yesterday from this weekend, they've blocked out the front two rows for pedestrians and cyclists.
Oh, that's really good.
But, you know, obviously, you know, you have to, you know, go all the way from Manchester to London for that.
Yeah, I haven't left Manchester for a few months now. It'll be a while. But, no, I think it'll be interesting to see when Tenet comes out, how it does. One of the big things recently is that they've said that, you know, it won't be a global release. It'll be released in different territories at different times, depending upon the situations, which is something quite new, but something I really think is a positive, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, like, the whole thing with, you know, being released different countries, different times, like, the entire play, I've been following this really closely for a few months, and it's been, and people can debate whether, you know, it's Nolan's involvement or Warner Brothers wants to do this out of the kindness of their own heart, that it's not being delayed to 21, it's being released now in a way that is to help cinemas, because they are allowed to open by the governments, rightly or wrongly, but, like, love it or hate it, they are open and they're starving for content. And so, therefore, the entire strategy appears to be that, you know, close that gap. Because if everything else is moving into 2021, as we've seen really recently as well with, you know, Mulan is now TBD. Top Gun Maverick has moved into next summer.
Yeah, Quiet Place 2 as well, which was meant to be out in March, I believe.
It was, like, yeah, meant to be out in March. When's it September? Now it's all the way in 21.
2021.
Yeah, Paramount has gone completely to 2021. Sony has gone to 2021, all sold off to streaming. In the way that An American Pickle, which ironically is coming to UK cinemas exclusively on August 7th from Warner Brothers. That's the first big studio film out in the UK cinemas. So yeah, Seth Rogen's going to save cinemas here in the UK.
As I said, like, we still don't have any cinemas open in Manchester, which is one of the biggest cities in the UK. Like, it's just very bizarre. It's up to each chain, I suppose, in terms of their strategy, in terms of opening.
Well, each chain, but arguably, you know, it's down to governments. I mean, each chain is really acting off two things, the government, but also the schedule. Like, there's a reason, although Boris Johnson has said cinemas can open from July 4th, most haven't really opened now, or trying to open until the end of this, until, you know, end of July, early August, because of Tenet. It really is because of that, because of the film schedules. And so, therefore, when Warner's made the decision to do this second release, it really is all in service of cinema owners, because, you know, they need that new content as soon as possible. And the more the US situation gets worse, and if you have to think that you have to have a global, worldwide day one release, then you have to just keep pushing it back. How long can cinemas, you know, that are allowed to open, therefore are kind of being forced to open by, you know, furlough ending and so on, can survive just on old and re-releases and indie movies alone? And that's, you know, that's what, love it or hate it, that's why Nolan is and Warners are doing what they're doing.
I was gonna say, like, I hate to say it, but something like Unhinged, it won't draw people to a cinema. You need a big blockbuster with massive hill, something like Tenet. Not even, like, I don't think New Mutants will do it, because it's just got such a, I don't know, because it's been delayed so many times for years now. It's got this vibe about it, but it's a bit negative. But I can't even see Mulan doing it. Like, it needs to be a big blockbuster to bring people back. Like, I used to go to cinema 4 times a week. I used to go see all the releases, but that's rare. Like, I don't know anyone else really in my life except for like big film fans and film journalists who actually do that. It needs to be a big blockbuster to save cinemas. But
people, on average, in the UK, the average person in the UK only goes to the cinema just under 3 times a year. A year.
Wow. A year.
Uh-huh.
So that would be like Star Wars, Marvel, and something else. Like
Disney, like probably. Something else Disney, probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Fast and Furious or something, maybe. So that's what I mean. Like, we're not getting, like, Marvel, the Black Widow is November, I believe.
Yes, it is.
And then Star Wars is, well, that's all been delayed for like years now. So
we've still got Bond.
We've still got Bond. I always forget about Bond. But
yeah, like now with Tenet, where it is, there's undoubtedly a ton of pressure for everything else big that's still in 2020. So that's, which at the moment is basically just Warner Brothers films. So Wonder Woman in June. Then you've got Bond with Universal, while everything up, that's their only big film in 2020. That's their main, because they've moved Halloween to 21, they've moved Fast and Furious to 21, they've taken a whole bunch of stuff to VOD. They've still got Universal Candyman. Universal moved
Fast and Furious ages ago. Candyman, yeah. But I don't think Candyman's like a big blockbuster driver. I think like horror, especially niche. Like another thing is that it needs to be a film with like at least a 12A rating, because it needs to be one that like families go see, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Like the thing about Unhinged, and all credit to the US distributor Solstice, and because their whole shtick, and I will call it a shtick, is the first they're taking, because obviously cinemas are like the whole, you know, sort of schedules of cinema openings is that they obviously want to open a couple of weeks before the first big blockbuster, you know, to test the waters essentially.
Yeah.
And the distributors behind Unhinged in the US position the film in a way in that, you know, it gets to be the first, and they take advantage of that 2-week window. So they are technically the first. But it's like, there's a reason why when Tenet moved, Unhinged moved.
Oh, yeah.
Cinemas are not going to open for Unhinged alone.
No.
Cinemas
are still closed here.
Yeah, again, like, if anyone from Altitude is listening, all due respect to you guys.
Yeah, I love Altitude. They made one of my favourite films of last year, a film called Beats, about Scottish rave. But one thing I was going to say was, I wish indie cinemas did have the power to bring people back to cinemas, but sadly, they just don't. But yeah, as we
but you know what? A lot of them aren't opening until September, October. And, you know, honestly, given, you know, the state of COVID here, for the better.
Yeah.
To be completely honest with you. But you know what, in the long term, in this whole, you know, debate of whether cinemas will survive, it's really the indies that have more of the potential too, because they have more dedicated audiences that, you know, part of the whole deal with VOD and the theatrical windows out of the fear that as soon as the film is available at home, no one's going to go to the cinema to see it. Like, why would you? It's available in the home. You can just, you know, kick your feet up on the sofa and so on. The thing about indies is that, but out of necessity over the last few years, and there's probably been no kind of better case study of this than Curzon Cinema School. Mm. Obviously, their own distributor as well with Artificial Light. They released Parasite, admittedly traditional release, but Portrait of a Lady on Fire went day and date on their platform, Curzon Home Cinema. And because they have that audience, they have an audience that is willing to go to their cinemas even though the film's available in the home. Like, The Irishman was the second biggest film for that cinema chain last year. And that was on Netflix after 3 weeks.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people still who, like, I go, like, I've just become a bit of a weirdo. Like, I try and see even old movies for the first time on the big screen. Like, I saw, like, Saving Private Ryan, like, last year for the first time. That was on a big screen just because I'm a believer in the big screen experience. But even like stuff that's on digital, I would still go. And part of it is because I want to show my support for cinema, but also it doesn't feel the same watching it at home.
I mean, I fully agree with you. Like, the last couple of years, the Prince Charles has been my almost kind of like my third home, you know. Also seeing all this stuff on 35mm for the first time was just amazing. And but now you've got this health risk factor coming in, which is just so bloody unfortunate.
Yeah, I really feel for cinemas in this time, and I do hope I hope that Tenet comes out soon, I suppose, for them. But also selfishly, I'm a bit like, I want it to be delayed again, just so I know I can feel safe going. Which I know is very selfish, because I should be like all about supporting cinemas, but I suppose the government should be stepping up and supporting them. That's the
ultimately the buck stops with them. But you know, we talk about, you know, we want to support cinema, but ultimately it's the audiences that make the cinema. If they don't feel safe, is it worth it? But that's a whole other debate for
I know.
There's a whole separate podcast we can record about the whole Tenet release gate and whatever
Tenet
the
release
hell
gate.
However the hell we would call this, you know, when they're going to be oral histories, you know, this time next year or in 2 years' time, whenever we get through this.
I mean, it's been fascinating to watch. Like, I remember there was a week where film Twitter was just going on about chairs, Christopher Nolan and chairs, and it's like, what world do we live in? Whereas this is a story that goes on for about 2 weeks, but it was just not true as well, but... Hey ho! I suppose you are looking forward to Tenet when you can see it safely at a cinema.
Yeah, there's
hopefully
that,
at a cinema.
Yeah, hopefully, but you know, I'll take a drive-in. I mean, honestly, yesterday, you know, watching Unhinged, you know, get in the front row. You know, you like if you've got a car with a great, you know, radio and audio system, which I'm lucky enough to have, you know, it's a great experience. I thought so. You know, I'll be happy with that. Just Warner Brothers, just please give them the film, right? that's the thing. Yeah. But also, I think, you know, coming back to trailers, there is something that we didn't mention, is that there will be one more Tenet trailer on the way, which is going to be exclusive to cinemas with the Inception re-release.
Yes,
we've known this for a while when they first announced the re-release, but
he's getting delayed.
Yeah, now it's on August. Yeah, now it's on August 12th in the UK and August 21st in the United States. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they have in there. We found out, you know, a couple of days ago that it's the piece that was intended for CinemaCon this year,
yes.
Which is for those that don't know, is this big event for press and industry and cinema owners, where studios show off behind closed doors, although we do get reactions, you know, some exclusive footage from upcoming films. And part of the things that are interesting about, you know, CinemaCon and Comic-Con to a certain degree is that, you know, especially the pieces that don't come online, and that's part of the reason why they don't come online, is that they're aimed at a different audience.
Mm.
And it will be very interesting to see what is going to be in that 3.5 minute Tenet. They are officially calling it, in terms of, they're sending it out to cinemas as trailer 4, as opposed to, like, when it was the prologue, it was sent as the prologue, you know, MGR, Merry-Go-Round, that's the code name for the film, MGR prologue. But now it's Tenet trailer 4. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, I'm probably not going to be going, but I think, like, if there's a dirty secret when it comes to Nolan trailers, I'm sure Warner's knows this. There is a whole part of the experience for Nolan fans when they get to see a crappy quality version of a trailer for the first time, of a Nolan trailer. You know, everything else we think that, oh, you don't want to see, like, a new first look at Dune for the first time in terrible quality, but with Nolan, nope. Like, this is tradition. This is tradition at this point.
Yeah,
maybe that's why he never released that Tenet teaser online, because he knew that was going to get, you know, bootlegged. And although, obviously, you know, Warners won't be happy themselves about it, but I think they know that it's part of the experience.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, I just hope that I can see the Inception re-release just to see the new Tenet trailer, but also Dune, which I'm very excited for.
Yeah, if it pans out.
There's no cinemas open where I am, and I'm not braving a train to the middle of somewhere else, so... It's been an interesting time, but it's been great having you on, Anton. Thank you very much. Where can people follow you online or see more of your work?
They can follow me on Twitter at AntoVolk. You can also follow Trailer Track on trailer-track.com and obviously at Trailer Track on Twitter.
Yes, and I always follow Trailer Track for all my trailer news, and you always have some great stuff on there. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was me and Anton Volkov chatting about all things Nolan and film marketing. Join us soon for more bonus episodes in the build up to release of Tenet. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter at NolanMeNolanYou, and feel free to get in touch too with any feedback. See you next week.